So we are here with another Personal is Pedagogical podcast. My name is Michelle Knight. I am your host. Please introduce yourself to the audience and let them know what your title, department, and campus is.
All right. Hey, how's everyone doing? My name is Henry Caballero. I'm a professor with the ELAP program at the Rockville campus. I've been there since 2001, so I've been around.
That is so great. I've seen your resume, so you have been here for a number of years. Would you share some of that with me, your educational and your professional background and your experiences?
Sure. So you're talking about before I got into MC or?
Sure, you can start there.
Okay. Well, you know, I started out my dream was not to be a professor, to be honest with you. I had a lot of different ideas, but, you know, being a teacher was not one of those. And then I got into a job where I was doing, it wasn't a full-time permanent job. I'd already gotten my bachelor's degree, and I was working on doing some videography work and some other things. And so I started doing substitute teaching. And, you know, I enjoyed the classroom. It was good being a substitute because I didn't have to worry about lesson plans or grading. So I would just pop in, do whatever I had to do, and leave. And I kept getting calls back to different schools, and the system was automated. So every morning it seemed like I had a job to do. And being in the classroom, so I was all the way from, you know, elementary school all the way to high school. And it felt good. And so I started teaching GED classes and ESL classes to adults at night. And then, you know, I thought this is something that I would like to pursue. It was good, you know, being in the classroom. It's energizing, interacting with people, being able to share my knowledge and experience was always a good thing. So then when I was looking at graduate school, of course, I thought, well, you know, I'm going to try this, the education route. And there was an opportunity for a fellowship to provide credentials and education for people interested in bilingual and ESL education. And I'm from the state of Texas. And at that point, this was like the early 90s. There was a great need for ESL and bilingual teachers. So I applied and was interviewed and was accepted into this program. We were, I don't know, a cohort of probably nine or 10 of us. And so we took our classes together, and it was really interesting. A lot of those that were in the cohort had already been teachers full-time with teaching certificates and had been in the classroom for years. So it was a good experience for me. I was able to learn alongside them, you know, our content for the graduate program, but also to learn from them their insights of the classroom. And so part of my credentialing was to take classes are like classroom management, and a lot of it made sense to me. And so I thought, you know, this is great. I think I want to focus on this. So I stayed in Texas, was teaching adults. Maybe for a couple of years, I got my degree in 1999, in about 2000. And then, you know, my wife had lived in the area in Rockville and Northern Virginia area before she moved to Texas. And so she said, you know, what would you consider moving back or moving over there? And I thought, you know, why not? So we moved here in the summer of 2001, and I applied for Montgomery College. Was given a temporary full-time position. And so, you know, the rest is basically history. I've been, you know, enjoying my time at MC, of course, and have been, you know, serving in other programs and other things with you, as you know, and other things that we've done, a lot of stuff, you know, going on campus. So it's been very rewarding for me.
We are very lucky, I feel, to have you here at Montgomery College. And I have enjoyed working with you too, Henry. How do you feel that your background and your perspective have shaped your views on teaching and learning? It's so interesting that you didn't want to be a teacher, but you caught the bug by actually doing it as a substitute.
Yeah. Well, that's a great question, Michelle, because, you know, like I said, I had never really planned on being a teacher. And as far as being a student, I was an okay student. You know, I had my favorite classes, of course, where I put all my passion and energy. And then I had my classes where I just muddled through it because I had to get it done, right, to graduate. And that probably, if you asked a few of my high school teachers whether or not they would see me as a teacher, they would have probably said, no, not that guy. But anyway, so, you know, I've had, you know, different jobs. I was just sharing with a student yesterday during office hours because she's taking one class. And, you know, she's like, I know I need to just get back into school and so much is going on, but I know that I can't get the job I want. I can't get the degree, the career I want, and be able to provide an example for my son unless I go to school. And I said, you know, that a similar situation happened to me. I've worked in fast food. I've delivered pizzas. I've worked in doing all kinds of different jobs. And I think that, you know, now that I'm teaching at Montgomery College, I come into contact with students from various backgrounds, and I feel that I, you know, can give some advice based on my own experiences of whenever I decided, okay, you know, I think I'm done with this kind of work. I need to get serious and I need to buckle down and to decide, okay, I'm going to go to school. So, you know, with all of those things that happen, I know that education is a big part of our degree, you know, making sure that we finish our classes and do those things. But there's so many other things that go on that help to shape us. And so I hopefully bring into the classroom my experience of not being a full-time student at times, of taking, you know, it took me a long time to get my degree. I didn't finish in 4 years. I did take some time off. I moved back home and had some work, and it, you know, just so a lot of the same experiences that our students are going through, I feel like I, you know, have lived through that and can reflect that, and hopefully they can see that, hey, you know, if my professor did it, I guess I could too, you know. So yeah,
I think that's great, because it does help, I suppose, probably inform your empathy in the classroom. And you have that experience to know what it's like to be juggling multiple priorities, multiple jobs, not necessarily be a full-time student. And it is, I agree with you, so important that the students see that. So in thinking about that, and that students are probably looking at you now and you're having an impact on them. What about you? What teachers do you feel had an impact on you when you were school aged or at the college or university?
Right,
who
right.
impacted you in your teaching style?
Okay. Well, you know, there are probably a few teachers that I would say. I think the teachers who mostly paid attention and not necessarily lectured me on things or were great teachers, of course. All my, you know, anybody who's in the classroom, they are prepared, they know their content. But I think that the teachers who I looked up to and admired and I felt a connection with, you know, the kinds of teachers that you know, look students in the eyes when they talk to them, and the kinds of teachers that were encouraging and that listened. You know, there's all kinds of things that go on, and I saw some of this in my graduate program as well. There were some very empathetic, you know, faculty members, and I think, you know, wow. So here's this person with a PhD and has, you know, served in national, you know, for the National Education Association, you know, doing work beyond just teaching in the classroom. But that person actually sits down, gets on my level, and, you know, talks to me. That makes a big difference. And so those are some of the things. I can't really pinpoint the name of one or two, but I do know. In fact, when I moved to Maryland, I had stayed in contact with a couple of my professors who were interested to making sure that I was, you know, following through with, you know, getting my job and writing letters for me and doing all kinds of things that helped me really get my place at MC.
So are there any classroom activities or practices that you strongly believe in, things I must do these things with my students?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think that discussion is really important. I know that I teach accelerated classes and I have got my content, I've got my lesson plans. We've got to do X number of quizzes and they've got to write X number of papers. And I feel that starting discussions or having discussions in the classroom, even if we don't agree on the on you know, being able to listen to each other and to be able to voice our opposition or our agreement, I think is really is important. It's something that people need to learn how to do, rather than just yelling at each other or using, you know, resorting to physical violence or something. A lot of what we see in the media, I think that I can accept you as a person and respect you, even if I don't agree with you. And so sometimes, if, you know, by having classroom discussions, and I encourage students to not, don't feel like you have to agree with me. I just had a student, I'm just talking about this because I had a student email me. She had to watch, the students have to watch a video and summarize and then do a reflection. There's a summary response paper that they're working on. But the response is going to be an analytical type response. And she saw the video and she said, you know, send me an email, professor, I'm not going to do well on this assignment. I don't agree with the person's views on the video and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, you don't have to agree, but that's the whole purpose. I think you have found the focus of this assignment is to say, I agree or I don't agree, and to be able to you know, have organized ideas and clearly state why you do agree or don't agree with someone else's views. That's really important. And so, yeah, I think that those are things that I try to do. As far as activities go, you know, that's something that I wish that I, you know, we could spend more time doing in our classrooms rather than just getting through the curriculum.
It sounds like you're teaching your students to be global citizens of the world, because that is so important to be able to take in a multitude of viewpoints. I feel like that's missing in our society today. And even though you don't agree with them, be able to express yourself respectfully, collegially. People do. They have a right to believe what they want to believe. And you, you're doing your students a good service. You're really preparing them for the world.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, with one of the, I'm so proud and really, I cannot express and how grateful I feel to be working at Montgomery College, because we have such a diverse student body. You know, the idea of global citizens, I mean, it's our classroom, you know, because we've got students with various religious backgrounds and beliefs and come from different cultures, have different linguistic foundations. And we're all coming to, you know, to English 101 to learn how to write papers. And so, but just having that, you know, in the classroom, making, you know, having that resource available to us is important. And I wish that, you know, I wish that more people, and I'm sure quite a few, but I wish that more high school students would see the value of coming to MC to take a couple of classes, just to kind of figure out like, wow, you know, this is a real college experience, because these are people that are maybe not my age. They don't look like me. Maybe they don't live in my neighborhoods, and you know, being able to see what everyone else can bring to the table, and even adding their own voice, is important for this conversation, you know, for the global, to have that whole enriching experience, to be able to say, I am a global citizen, is to actually live it.
Right, I agree. So what then would you say would be the most important thing to think about when it comes to engaging students?
Oh, yeah. Empathy is really important, and I feel like when students know that you value them, that you respect them, I think that they tend to, and I'm talking about myself as well, whenever I take classes as a student, what helps me to engage, and that's kind of what I try to do in my classes as well. I don't lecture by PowerPoint. And I'm not saying that that's, I mean, you know, there are some times when that is important, and it's good to have that as one of your teaching strategies. But I don't know if that's going to be effective to engage students all the time, if that's all you do. Just like having these open, you know, discussions that, you know, I'm right now we're on Zoom, but if I were to, you know, sit down at my desk and just have conversations with students, we can't always do that either. I know there's got to be some kind of a balance, but students are engaged whenever I'm passionate about what the topic is, what the idea that we're trying to say. I like to model for students, provide samples, my own samples. It's a writing class. And so if I assign a narrative, I'm going to try to do narrative writing myself, you know, even though I've got maybe some canned or prepared samples, which are always good for students to see what models look like. If I'm saying, okay, look, we're going to write some dialogue for, I'm going to try to model with them. I'm going to sit down and say, okay, if this were my paper, this is what I would do. And I would, you know, write it on the board or, you know, type it on the screen now that we're on Zoom. To show them that, you know, I'm doing this and I make mistakes just like everyone else, but that's the whole part. That's the part of the writing process, to go back and say, okay, ooh, I want to change this word, or I think I need to add a comma here, or I want to change this. Maybe if I write the sentence differently, it'll work better. So I like to do a lot of modeling with them, have them provide examples and for me to kind of shape it with them. Yeah.
So let me ask you this, Henry. I know that you do a lot of cool things in terms of technology and other things. How do you keep current in your teaching practice?
That's a good question. I used to, it's funny because I used to have my children when they were going to college, right? So I used them. I would ask them questions and get their idea, their input on certain, you know, things to use as far as technology or other ways to be caring. I had an Instagram account. This was way back, maybe 2015, 2016, because students would write the agenda and then the homework on the board. And then students would come up and just take a picture of it. And I thought, okay, well, that's great for that one student, but what about everyone else? So I had an Instagram account so that I could take pictures of whatever I had, you know, whatever examples I had written on the board and or whatever homework that I would post to my Instagram account. But then, you know, Instagram became out of favor and so people moved on. And so I had to move on too.
Wait a minute. I guess I'm still behind because I didn't know Instagram was out of favor. Well, are you putting on TikTok now? Are you putting it on TikTok now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I had a few followers and then, you know, like as the semesters, maybe I did that for a couple of semesters. And then I got to the third semester and people weren't following me. So I thought, well, maybe it's just not worth my time. And maybe they're not doing that really. That's not it's not popular anymore. So I'm going to just drop my Instagram account. So.
Well, I read something last night that somebody said that Facebook, that they asked their kid about Facebook and they said, well, you know, Facebook is for old people. No, Facebook is for very old people. Instagram is for kind of old people. Dang, I guess I must be one of those kind of old people.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's still some value to having Instagram. But so having kids that were in college. That was one of the advantages, I guess. I would run things by them, but now they're not in school anymore. So, staying current is just. So I look through my newsfeed. Whatever algorithms are out there for my YouTube and other things like that. And of course, you know, I teach English, and so there's a lot of content available as far as lessons go, and to see what other teachers do. Not necessarily that I would do that, but that I could direct students and say, hey, you've got to go check out Grammar Girl, or you might want to, we're talking about introductions. Maybe if you see this video, this person's channel, it will, something, maybe the light bulb will click for you then more than just me explaining it. So I just try to connect them to other resources, you know, and so that's one of the things that I do to stay current, is just to really see what is available to them. And to try to keep that updated, because some of those videos from when YouTube you know, first got started maybe aren't as nice anymore, or as
right,
you know, the content is maybe can be presented a little bit flashier, you know. No more Instagram.
We'll see about that. What do you think? You mentioned some challenges earlier for students. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges for faculty in helping students to succeed?
You know, I think that when students are having problems, sometimes they feel, and this is based on some things that students have told me, is I didn't know that you wanted to know that about me. And, you know, like if a student isn't turning in a paper, you know, you know, what's going on? Is there something? And I don't want to get too personal, right? It's their business, but you know, let me know if you're like behind work or if something's going on. You know, don't turn in an assignment, because then I feel like you're ignoring the assignment. But you know, if something's going on, I think it's important that you bring that to your professor's attention. I had a student see their midterm grade and dropped my class once without even talking to me. And so I sent an email to the student and said, hey, I saw that you dropped the class. Yeah, I'm not going to pass this class. I said, how do you know you're not going to pass? You haven't even talked to me yet. And so I think one of the challenges is that students, maybe some students are under the impression that professors aren't interested, or we don't have the time, or you know, because all my colleagues at MC, I mean, everyone that I come across are so interested in working with students and helping them to succeed. But I think that maybe this idea, you know, maybe it comes from where other high school teachers said, oh, your college professors aren't going to put up with that, or they're not going to be interested in this or that, you know, or they might hear that from someone and they don't feel like they can communicate, you know, with their professors. And I always tell them, this goes for any class, before you make a decision like dropping a course, or if you're struggling with an assignment, please let your instructor know. And, you know, Emily Rosado, oh my gosh, she is my inspiration, because I know that how she connects with her students. And so she's my, I guess my, the person that I would like to be. I think, okay, what would Emily say, or what would Emily do, you know, in this situation? Because our students are there's so much going on. And as I said before, you know, with my own kids, I noticed how life is tough, right? You know, we've gone through it. And maybe because I went through it years and years ago, maybe I have forgotten like what it's really like, what it's like to maybe not understand an assignment, or to get stuck on something, or to have something come up, you know. In my background and where I'm from, Michelle, you know, your friends and your family, they can also impose, right? Like, and you feel obligated. It's like, oh, you know, and that's, you know, that's some of the things that I try to share with young men is to, you know, to watch out for that, because, you know, you have a different goal maybe than what your friend has, and you can't always be there to rescue your friend. Or so you know, you have to do you have to make your own choices about some things. And so sometimes we get pulled into situations, or we get pulled away from doing some you know, working on our assignment, and you know, those are just things that I think that some faculty maybe are not aware of, because we have stability in our lives, and a lot of our students don't have maybe necessarily that stability. And so we just have to remember what it's like, you know, to be in those situations. And you know, if we were fortunate enough not to have to live in those situations of worrying about, you know, the rent's due at the end of the month and I don't think I'm gonna make it, then maybe they need to, you know, to be a little bit more conscientious of where our students are coming from.
I think it's so important for students to be able to see themselves, as you were saying earlier, in the faculty members and the staff at the college. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you this. If you could go back in time, is there anything that you would have done differently in your classroom teaching, knowing what you know now as a sage professor?
Oh, as far as my teaching goes, I don't know. One of the things that I do regret, Michelle, whenever I first got to MC, and this didn't come to my mind until maybe just a few years ago, I regret not getting a world map and putting a pin where all my students are from. You know, because wow. I know that I have come into contact, and I was just thinking about, you know, just the continent of Africa, how many students representing different countries, you know, right. North Africa, East, West, you know, in South Africa. I mean, it's just like amazing, because students do come to my office sometimes. And I think it would be great if they could see, like, I'm not alone. There are other people that have come through this classroom as well. Mm-hmm. And they succeeded. You know, that's something that I put in my welcome to students on my Blackboard, is that, you know, you're not the first person to come through this class. There have been many others that have succeeded, and you're going to add your name to that list.
That's a beautiful sentiment, and it's something to put on your Instagram every year. But that is really, really something to think about. It's amazing mm-hmm. to think. I mean, mm-hmm. because I forgot how many different nationalities of students we have, but we have so many, probably more than anyone else in the country. It's a real badge of pride for us as a school.
Right.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want me to know about your philosophy of teaching or learning, or anything else you want to share with the audience?
I don't know. As far as my philosophy goes, that's hard to pinpoint. I mean, I've done some tutoring in the writing center, and I do that so that I can get an idea when I teach my writing and grammar classes in the ELAP program, or even in English 101, so that I'm aware of, like, some of the other writing assignments that come from other, like, health, or that come from biology, or that come from history professors. I want to have an idea of what are some of the writing assignments that are going to be given, so that whenever I'm preparing my lessons, that I'm able to guide students, you know, to an understanding of, okay, this is something that I'm going to use later, or this is something that I might see later in another assignment. I don't know if there's anything else related to my teaching. I mean, I'm grateful for, you know, for being at MC. You know, we have some fabulous colleagues. We've got some awesome initiatives at the school that you're well aware of. I mean, like, this podcast is great. And we, you know, I feel like if somebody has an idea at Montgomery College, and, you know, you can get two or three other people excited about that, and it'll happen, you know, and that's something that I don't know that happens on every college campus. You know, I'm sure that there's all kinds of stories from faculty members that aren't as happy with their work situation, but I cannot say that's with me. I work in a great department, people that have a lot of heart for their students. And so, you know, I'm just grateful.
Well, I am grateful to have had the opportunity to talk with you this afternoon, Henry. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.